Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the opening chapter, the first chapter of the book of Habakkuk in the OU's Nach Yomi project. Habakkuk is the third of the Nevi'im who Chazal identified as coming from the time of Menashe, and therefore not having had identified in their opening lines the kings with whom they were associated, in contrast to other Nevi'im. And that's why the book is seen as starting. That's the explanation given for why the Sefer starts with the words HaMasa Asher Chaza Habakkuk HaNavi, the Masa, the load, the vision. Rashi says on the word Masa that Masa means Metal Nevuata, a load of Nevua. Mashenasa V'kibel B'Ruach HaKodesh, what he lifted and carried and received in Ruach HaKodesh. And this comes back to this continuation that I hope I am not belaboring for you, but that continues to make me curious as the interaction between, if there is any, between the Navi and the Navi's personality, the Navi's historic location, and the message that Hashem sends him. Is it Hashem, in some conscious, wrong word, but in some conscious way, chooses the message the Navi will get? Is it the Navi is looking for information on certain topics, and those are the ones that he's open to receiving Nevuah, he or she is open to receiving Nevuah for, or is it somewhere in the middle? I suspect that somewhere in the middle, with each piece of information captures me, and I take note of it, and I find it interesting. In our context, so Rashi, when he talks about metal nevuata mashenasa v'kibel, what he lifted and took, so Rashi seems to be, and Rashi's not one to generally do this, but Rashi seems to be suggesting that the Navi is sort of gathering it from the well, as it were, picking it up on his own and taking it on his own. That fits well. That fits well with other topics, other midrashim we have about Habakkuk. For example, Radak says that the Nevuah of Habakkuk is going to be about what Paras and Madai, Rashi thinks it's about Nebuchadnezzar, but about what Nebuchadnezzar or Paras and Madai will do in the end. So when Rashi says it's about Nebuchadnezzar, right, I'm sorry, yeah, it's Nebuchadnezzar and Paras and Madai, according to Radak. I apologize. Radak agrees it's also Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar is in the future, because we're talking about Menashe here is the understanding. Although it is true that Bavel already starts in Menashe's time to be a problem, because Menashe, somewhere in the middle of his kingdom, is taken into exile, and there he does tshuva, and there he returns. So it's not so far in the future. And the Radak notes, "V'heichel lihitra'im kineged hakel al maseh harishayim shemirim liYisrael hatzadikim." And he's going to complain to Hashem. That's going to be much of, at least this first chapter, is a complaint to Hashem over the evil that the non-Jews are going to do to the Jewish people. And that's a lot of what the Nevuah is about. So if it's a complaint of Habakkuk, you might say, well, it's not his Nevuah then. So obviously when he says the Masa, it's a Masa that he was Chose, it means that for whatever his role was, it's at the very least ratified by Hashem, or included by Hashem, or he's told by Hashem that this is part of Nevuah. More interesting to me is a Medrash Tehillim, which says, and it's going to be interesting because this is going to sound like a very familiar story, I'm pretty much sure to all of us. It says, when Habakkuk comes to Hashem, he says, and this is going to be the first pasuk of Parak Bet, it's not our Parak yet, but it's going to have ramifications break off as well. Amar al mishmarti e'emoda ve'yatzeva al matzah. I'm going to stand siege, as it were, and we'll get to that. So what do they say? The Medrash assumes that Habakkuk made a circle, and he stood in, or he made a shape in the ground, and he stood in the middle of it, and he said, I'm not leaving here until you tell me what's going on. So you tell me what's going to happen, and tell me what I want to understand. And so Hashem tells him, and then he says, and Hashem doesn't answer him. So he says, Adana Hashem Shivat Yivlot Yishma, that is our Pasuk Bet. So let's read Pasuk Bet. Ana Hashem Shivat, until what point Hashem will I call out, Vlot Yishma, and you're not going to listen. Ezak Elecha Hamas Vlot Yishma, I'm going to cry out to you that it's Hamas. Now we've seen the word Hamas in terms of financial wrongdoings and seen how serious that is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when Habakkuk calls out Hamas Vlot Yishma, and you're not going to redeem them, he's making a very serious complaint towards Hashem. So Hashem says to him, what are you doing? You're not an Amal Aretz. In the Medrash, his presentation, you're not an Amal Aretz. You're a Ben Tower. You understand stuff. And I told them at the end of Galut Rishonah, so this is obviously now seeing it way into the future, that it's going to be 70 years And they didn't believe me, and they would instead, we're going to build houses in Babel. This is all coming from Yirmiyahu, from the middle of Yirmiyahu, where they say, Yirmiyahu says they're going to build houses, they're going to live there, and when the 7 years come, Korah says they can all go back, and then they don't come. So Hashem says, but nonetheless, I'm going to redeem them at the end, even so, and that's why towards the end of Habakkuk, he says, he starts praying to Hashem that Hashem should think of his chutzpah as being a shogeg rather than amazed, as being without full knowledge rather than premeditated and fully wrong, and that's why the third chapter has a tefillah Habakkuk Anevi al Shigyonot. It has sort of a prayer by Habakkuk, similar to what, as we'll talk about then, similar to what we have in Tehillim. So that presentation, first of all, I hope, I assume, it reminds everyone, reminds many of us, of the story of Choni HaMe'agel. The story of Choni HaMe'agel being recorded in Mishnah that he, when there was a time of famine and drought, not famine, drought, for the Jewish people, so they begged him to pray to Hashem, and what he did was, he drew a circle, and he stood in the middle of the circle, and he said, I'm not leaving here until you give us rain. And then the rain came, and he says, it's not good enough, and there's a whole discussion there. So that that temerity, that willingness to stand straight up to God, we might have thought was so connected to him being Choni HaMe'agel, but the truth is, if you take this Midrash, it seems like he had ample precedent for doing exactly this, and that was what he was relying on. He was relying on perhaps some kind of a tradition of that. So that's one aspect of it, that it sheds new light on a very famous, very well-known story. I'm always interested in situations like that, where you have a story, you think you know the story, and then you find some new piece of information that you might not have known otherwise, and then all of a sudden the story carries a new weight or has a new light shed on it. In addition to which, if we're talking about the time of Menashe, as we say we are, as I'll say we are, so this is a Navi giving nevuot in the time of Menashe. Menashe being an evil king, so evil that they are not identified by their king because it would be wrong to them, unfortunate to them, to do such a thing. And yet, the understanding of Chazal is, the assumption of Chazal is, that Habakkuk is coming to complain about the treatment the Jewish people are going to get. So that's clear in the Psukim, but it is surprising to me, anyway, to find that the people, that the Navi would have the ability, would have the boldness, right, the chutzpah, the insouciance, to turn to Hashem with complaints at a time when the Jewish people are in such a low and problematic spiritual state. So other Navi, and we're not used to that. Another Navi, we're used to the Navi coming to the people, b'shem Hashem, and telling them what they're doing wrong. And then sometimes begging for Hashem to have a certain amount of compassion over them. But here we have a Navi, who the portrayal of Chazal is, at a time of great spiritual problem, of a greatly problematic spiritual status. They are in their nadir, they're in a very low point in their spirituality, in their relationship with Hashem, and he's calling out to Hashem about the Hamas that he's seeing. Pasuk Gimel, lamatareini avin v'amal tabit, v'shod v'chamas l'negdi, v'yihi rivu madon yisa. Why is it that you're showing me, you're going to make me look at all these iniquities, all these things going on, all these terrible things that are going to be happening, and you're not going to save anybody? There's going to be spoil and plunder, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to bring fights and battles to the Jewish people, and you're not going to do anything, right? And the Radak, by the way, says that all of this of that Habakkuk is saying, right, when he says Gamata Tabit Amal Tabit, the complaints that Habakkuk is making, one of the messages that it's sending is that that Hashem is watching and sees people's actions, whether good or evil, and that's why it's a problem, right? If we believed in a God who in some way didn't pay attention to the world, then there would be no room for Habakkuk's complaint. So the Radak is pointing out these Psukim and Habakkuk are making very clear that we believe that God is aware of all that we do. And then the question is, how did God choose? The challenge is, how did God choose when and whom to punish, to reward, to stop, to hinder, to promote? And that is what the question is that Habakkuk is raising in Pasuk Daled, Al-Kain Tafug Torah. Habakkuk is saying to Hashem, this is a very strong claim. It's because of your acting this way, allowing the evildoers to succeed, allowing them to win out over other people. That's why Torah is problematic, right? The JPS English has, that's why decision fails. But that's not the easiest reading of the Pasuk, and that's not the way the Rashi and Radak take it. Al-Kain Tafug Torah, She Yisrael Ru'in Hatzlachato, the Jews see Bavel winning. So we would like them to say, oh, we must not have been good enough. But what Habakkuk is pointing out to Hashem is that people often don't say that. Instead, they're going to bow down to his gods, as happens in Navi. They're going to bow down to his gods because they're going to say, well, he's obviously the winner. He's obviously got the stronger gods. Pasuk Dalet in the Radak also, because when Rishayim win and Tzadikim lose, that's a very great challenge. And just to add to the challenge, we would hope it would be relatively easy if we're talking about a differentiation between real good and real evil, right? So then you'd at least hope, you might not succeed, but you'd at least hope that there would be room for people to understand what this was doing. It would just be a challenge of them having the strength of the fortitude, the strength of will, to not yield to that temptation to follow the winners, right? You say, well, the winners are winning, so I should follow them. So that, you know, if the winners are mass murderers, that's what we're, let's say, so if somebody joins Nazi Germany, the Nazis, because they were winners, so that's the kind of thing that we look at, we would hope none of us would be part of. But often it's not nearly so clear, and that's where it becomes more challenging, right? What if both sides are claiming that they are fighting for right, and that both sides think and see themselves as being on the side of good, and yet one is a winner, right? And so that's what you have to place it in, right? We nowadays would say, if somebody came to us and said, oh, worship idols, because that's the right way, we would say, oh, that's idol worship. But it doesn't approach itself that way. If we remember that in the people in this time were not so clear that idol worship in and of itself was wrong. I'm not saying they shouldn't have been. They should have been, but they weren't. So then, when they see the idol worshippers winning, it's not so clear to them that's an evil thing that they're doing. That might actually turn out in their minds and in their poor perspective of the world to be the right way. So nowadays, it would be the same thing. If you saw somebody being successful by cutting corners in business, by cheating a little bit here, there, a little bit there, by not giving tzedakah when they should, by not paying their taxes properly, and they make huge advances in their lives and in their wealth, so it's easily, that already is a much bigger challenge. That's already easily imaginable, at least to me, that people would say, oh, if they're doing it, it must be okay. And the moral issues become more complex and more difficult to stand up to and more difficult to hold on to. And that, I think, is what Habakkuk is saying, Al Kain Tefug Torah, Leitil Anitlach Mishpat, right? Because Kira Hashem Achtir HaTzadik, because the evildoers are winning over. They're able to hedge in. They're able to stop the Tzadikim. Al Kain Yatim Mishpat Mu'ukal. And that's why judgment emerges deformed, is the English, right? Because people don't understand what right and wrong is. Because it looks like they're succeeding, and it could succeed for 10 years, or 20 years, or 50 years. How do you know? Right? Is it true that evil will lose within every 50 years? Even 50 years, right? So let's say it's true. Again, I watch these things often, and so let's say in the morning paper I read today something about I was a doctor talking about how she should have 20 years before sat with a patient more and given them more time, and that we've sort of lost some of that, or some one of those typical kinds of things. But it struck me as another example of something that I note periodically, where people all of a sudden decide that this or this thing is absolutely right, absolutely the way to go. Obviously, this is the wave of the future. Sometimes it is, and then sometimes it's not. And when it's not, there may have been much sorrow, much difficulty, much trouble given in between from the fact they did it. So my favorite example is I used to know a family where in the early 70s, the parents, or the late 70s probably, the rumor was, I don't even know if it's true, but the rumor was the parents did drugs with the kids, right? Because the parents thought that there was nothing wrong with doing drugs, and then some of the kids turned out to have, came out having drug problems. When the parents did it, they weren't saying this, oh, we're going to destroy our children's lives. They had come to believe, like many people in their time did, that there's nothing really wrong with marijuana, let's say, whatever the drugs were, or whatever the things they were doing were. So that idea that you come to believe something, you know, if for 10 years around you, everybody's doing something and they're being successful, and it's not clearly and directly problematic or wrong that you can tell, and they're succeeding and doing well, the ability to hold on to the idea that nonetheless it's wrong is much more delicate than we'd like to think that it is. And that, I think, is part of what this Tafuk Torah, part of what's going to happen here, and that's why Mishpah will come out Me'ukal. Because why would I judge somebody as being wrong? They're just helping the corporation advance. So they're cooking the books a little bit. But everybody's doing it and succeeding, or they're taking on a level of debt that is wrong for them, or they're, right? So these are all examples that we have in our own times where you see that we can easily warp our judgments over a fairly short period of time. We can talk about new economic models. We can talk about a new savings model that you don't need to save as much as you used to. All sorts of things. And then when it goes bust, well, all of a sudden look around and say, oh, no, we were wrong. Right? Same thing with another simple example is, you know, I was reading recently a book about the making of the president in 1980. So there in the 1970s had been this huge gas shock because that was when the OPEC nations first started flexing their muscle. And so they were talking there about the need to avoid so much energy dependence and this and this and this. So the fact that electric cars didn't in the meantime get developed, that's one kind of a tragedy, one kind of a surprising aspect of it. But the fact that after such a thing had happened, right, you'd had those shocks, the fact that, the idea that you had the development of, right, there were no SUVs in the late 1970s, the development of an SUV market, right, the attraction to the acceptance of the idea that, yes, we're going to start driving vehicles, and the Hummer came even after that as a popular vehicle. Vehicles, not only that rely on gas, but that waste gas all over the place, waste oil, and that we did that, so it shows you. People just lose sight of right and wrong, and that's what we're talking about here with what's going on. That's what Habakkuk is complaining about. Re'uva goyim v'habitu pasuk v'hei. Re'uva goyim v'habitu v'itamvehu timahu kifoel poel b'yimeichem lo taminu ki supar. Look around, Habakkuk is saying, you're not going to believe what's going to happen. Right? So Rashi says that part of what the shock is that the Kazdim, the Bavliim, were a nation that wasn't even supposed to be, really. Right? So Rashi quotes the tradition based on the pasuk in Yeshaya Zah, Ha'am lo haya. They were one of three things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu regrets ever having made. Right? So that's part of the surprise here. It's going to be a nation that wasn't. So Rashi says that it's directed not only at the other nation, but also at the Jewish people. He should be surprised about this. The Radak says Jewish people. You should be surprised about this. Here's a nation that wasn't meant to be a nation, really, and look what's going to happen. A nation that's impetuous. They do what they want. They span the world. To take places that don't belong to them. It's an awesome and terrifying nation. Dreadful nation, and from them, so mishpato useito yetze. So the English has trouble with it. The JPS English has trouble with it. They say, they read it as their law and majesty proceed from themselves, right? Because they think mimenu mishpato is referring to the same thing, right? The literal meaning of mimenu mishpato useito is from him or them, mimenu mishpato, his or their law useito, and rules will go out. So they translate it as they make their own laws and rules. Then they note in the bottom, literally it's their law and majesty proceed from themselves, which they think means that. But so, and the Radak reads it sort of that way. He says it means that they are self-sufficient in that way. They can make their own rules and they can enforce their own rules. They don't need any help in doing that. But Rashi suggests a slightly different reading, which would be that from them, shoftim come out, which put fear and awe on everybody. So mishpatim, then Rashi says, is justitia. So this is a consistent expression of Rashi's. It's an old French word, which I think we generally think of as being justice, but Rashi here means enforcement. And Rashi also reads that as yisurim. So I wonder whether you could also read the thing as mimenu mishpato usei toyeitze, from them God's judgment will go out. But that would be perhaps a more midrashic reading. But the point is they are fully independent, fully able to enforce their own rules themselves. Pasuked v'kalumin me'irim susav, and their horses are faster than leopards. V'chadumis eiv erev, and they're faster than the wolves. Ufashu farashav farashav merachok yavou yaufu kinesher chash le'echol, and they go so quickly and they're faster than a nesher, a griffin, vulture, hurrying to go to the corpses that they see from afar, so that they can go and capture and get the plunders and the spoils that they need, that they want. Kulola chamas yavo, and their whole purpose is on chamas. So that's a word again, worth noting, right? Where their motives are on chamas, and chamas is the thing that led to the original mabul with Noah, the original flood with Noah. Chamas is the thing that Hashem says the Jewish people have been doing that will lead to their downfall. And now we're saying Bavel as a nation, so the vehicle of Hashem's destruction of the Jewish people in that first bayit, in the first temple, is a nation bent on chamas. And this is part of Habakkuk's complaint. Right? Part of the complaint is, it's an awful, terrible nation. Meaning, if it were to be true that the Jewish people at a certain time are doing the wrong thing, and the nation that is the vehicle of Hashem's punishment is a nation that is by its own light, not by its own light, by God's light, but in its own way righteous. So if, for example, a nation came that was the moderate form of Christianity, meaning they don't believe in what we might call idol worship, they don't believe in a Trinity, which is a form of idol worship. So if you leave the Trinity out of Christianity, it's a largely monotheistic religion. Even more clearly, Islam is a monotheistic religion, at least when observed appropriately and properly. Murder is still a crime in any religion, but observed properly, Islam is a monotheistic religion. So let's say you had moderate Muslims who, meaning that they were largely good, and they came and conquered the Jews and destroyed the Jews at a certain time, or destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, God forbid. At the very least, the advantage of that would be, though, that at that moment in history, you would say, well, they're more righteous than we are. So if they're more righteous, that's why they're winning. But the complaint of Habakkuk is that that's not true of Babel at all. Babel is completely focused on evil and on stealing and plundering and raping and pillaging. Vayasov kachol shevi, and they amass captives like the sands. Vehu b'melachim itkalas roznim mischaklo hu lechom ivtzai yischak vayitzbor afar vayel kida. And he sits among the kings and he holds them in derision. He laughs at them, and all the princes, all the other rulers of all the other nations are a joke to him. Any fortress he is funny to him. He can find any way around it, and so Rashi has this image of afar, he just gathers dirt and he captures it. Rashi has this vision of that if just each member, each soldier in his army brings a scoop full of dirt and makes such a big pile that he can stand on that pile and be higher than the wall and then shoot into the city. And that's one of the ways in which you battle against a city that's surrounded by a wall. The point is, his overwhelming force means that all of the ordinary ramifications are nothing to him. As chalaf ruach vayavor v'ashem zuchocho leloho. And then they pass on, right? They conquer, they win, and they pass on, that they find their success, and they keep going, right? They move on to their next success, and yet at the very moment when they're doing this, they're building up more guilt because that the end of the pasuk zuchocho leloho, they give all this strength, all of the credit for their victory, they give to their own gods. So Habakkuk, we'll go on for a second and what he's going to say to Hashem, but Habakkuk is pointing out that this is terrible. It seems to upend all of what's supposed to be right and proper in the world. It gives to a nation that is evil in so many ways, right? They're evil in their desire for pillage and plunder and the desire to steal and take from people. They're evil in the fact that they're a nation that shouldn't have existed at all. They're evil in the sense that they don't have good laws or sense of laws. And then when they yet they have so much power, so much ability to conquer. They are just the image that came to my mind. I was just thinking about this recently because I saw a thing on athletes who are so way ahead of their time, so above the general skills of their times that it's shocking. So the most recent one, obviously, is Michael Phelps, but then there's Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods and all of those athletes who are in their moment so much advanced over everybody else. This is the sort of the image that's been given of Babel in terms of warfare. They are so far advanced above everybody else that it's not even like a challenge to them to wage war against everybody else. And yet, even at the moment they're doing that, they're doing more evil because they are ascribing the victory not to Hashem, but to their idols. And that heightens the challenge that Habakkuk has the right to make to Hashem, right? The challenge that Habakkuk has the right to make to Hashem is, how could you let such a thing occur because it's not even serving your purposes, right? We generally might say that when people get punished by Hashem, so that is a vehicle for Hashem's name being made greater in the world. But when the vehicle of that punishment, when the people performing that service for Hashem are idol worshippers and are all these evil things like Babel is, so how does it do that? So that is the source of Habakkuk's complaint and sadness, and what he is saying. So pasuk yibed halo atam mikedem Hashem elokai kidoshi lo namu Hashem lemishpat samto v'tzur hochiach yisadto. So Habakkuk now says, but we know Hashem that you are mikedem, you are everlasting, and you are our holy God, and lo namut, and therefore let us not die by this person's hand. So the Radak says, see, you could have read it as just, I know this. But the Radak says, Alo Yavin Ki Atamik, that this complaint in Yudbed is, shouldn't he have known this? Shouldn't Bavel have known this? And throws in, and Amcha Yisrael Makirimcha, and your people Israel do know this, which is, I'm not sure that historically I would have bet on that being true of the people of Habakkuk's time, But Radak sees Habakkuk is saying it, and therefore, and then adding the prayer, let us not die. We know, he knows, Radak knows, Hashem lifts him to you have made him to be judge over us and to administer the punishment that we deserve. And atzur lochiach yisadto, and you made him into a cause of us, of I think punishing us, lochiach, to rebuke us for the things that we've done wrong. But Hashem, you're not able to. You are so pure. You can't look at evil, and you can't look at wrong, just wrong being done. So lama tavi bogdim? Why? How can you watch these bavliim who are traitors and who are wrongdoers? V'tacharish and be quiet. B'vavala rasha tzadik mimenu. When a rasha is going to swallow up those who are more righteous than him, than that rasha. So on that pasuk on Yud Gimel, the Radak points out, and he quotes a chazal that we'll get to in a second, that the complaint is, or the plaint perhaps, the rather than complaint, not so much that Habakkuk is complaining, is that he's bemoaning, he's wailing over the fact that Hashem is going to stand silent while the Jews are destroyed by Bavel. And then the Radak says, Ki Yisrael afal pishayim rishayim, Tzadikim hem minevuchanetzar ve'amo. Even though the Jews are evildoers, are doing wrong, they're still better than Nebuchadnezzar and his people. And so that's sort of what Habakkuk is trying to say. How can you watch? Why would you watch? As Bevala Rashay Tzadik Mimeno. So the Gemara Bava Metzia, which the Radak quotes, says, Amar Rav Huna Tzadik Mimenu Boleya, Tzadik Gamor Eino Boleya. And this leads into a whole discussion that you can find. I'll give you some highlights of it. A whole discussion you can find of, is there a point at which somebody becomes invulnerable to the evildoers around him, and they really rise above them, and people can't do wrong to them? So this Limud is trying to tell you that really the answer to Habakkuk's question isn't how could it be happening. It's sort of just a sadness that it is happening. But the idea is that when people who are tzaddikim sheinam gemurim, they might be righteous or relatively righteous, but not perfectly righteous, so they may in fact be vulnerable to the attacks and to the control of even rank evildoers. That's what we're seeing here, that he can swallow up those who are more righteous than he, but a tzaddik gemur, he couldn't. And that is very related to a gemara in Megillah Davav and Bibet, where Rabbi Dostai Bar Matun says, you can try to fight against Rishayim in this world. And if somebody says to you, that's a pasuk in Tehillim, Lamed Zayin, Al Titchar Bamireim, Al Tikaneh Be'osei Avla. So somebody says that to you, the Gemara Megillah says. So it's Mishali Bonok Fomorken. That's somebody who doesn't have full faith and full ability to rely on their own righteousness. So what does that pasuk mean? Al Titchar Bamireim. So that pasuk Tehillim he reads as, don't try to compete with them to be like them, and don't be jealous of them to become like them. In other words, as we've been saying in this parak, one of the challenges, one of the temptations is to think that they're doing the right thing, or even if they're not doing the right thing, they're really succeeding, let me do what they're doing. So then he quotes the pasuk Mishnah, which says, you shouldn't get involved with the chataim. So the Rabbi Dostai says, lo kasha, habe milei didei, habe milei dishmaya. One answer he gives is, that's in your own matters. Meaning, when I say, or when he said, that we're allowed to strive and try to beat Rishaim in this world, didn't mean in our own personal matters, our own personal business matters, stuff like that. So there, the truth is, Rishaim, evildoers, may have the upper hand on us throughout our lives. That's a faith-challenging kind of thing, as we pointed out several times here in this parak alone, but that might be true. But in Milei Dishmaya, when it comes to religious matters, there, we're able to challenge them. So that would seem like his conclusion is, when it comes to faith matters, we should be able to take on evildoers at all times. That has not been the history of the Jewish people. I'm not even sure it's our history now, whether we could really stand up to those who disagree with us on faith matters and just beat them back or fight with them or compete with them and win. So then it gets more complicated. Or maybe no, it's in your own matters even all the time. That if you're a fully righteous person, so then you can challenge them and compete with them and fight with them go head to head with evildoers, even on matters of your own personal financial issues. So, 2 points about that. First is, that would, if we follow that answer, and there are other answers coming up, but if you follow that answer, it would mean that there's some belief that when it comes to at least fully righteous people, that in fact, even in this world, even in this time, there would be some set of clear justice or clear success going on. It's not clear that that's true, although we never know who's a tzaddik gamur. But it also implies or assumes, or the Steiber Netun is assuming, that there are people who have the right, not me, but there are people who have the right to assume they're tzaddikim gemurim, that they are fully righteous people, and to act that way. And that would then not be a lack of modesty, and it also wouldn't mean that they say, well, I've got everything I need, because there's steps to go beyond being a tzaddik gemur. Right, your religious growth has not ended if you're a tzaddik gemur, so that you could be a tzaddik gemur. You could know that about yourself and therefore feel the right to go head to head with an evildoer who tries to cheat you or steal from you, even in melee today, even in matters of your own thing that have no real religious component, and expect to win. Why does it say here tzaddik menu bolea, tzaddik gemur ina bolea? But then the last one gives the game away, really, because the other possibility is that another possibility is that when he is in a successful role, when things are going well for him, that would be different, and then you should never go up against him. So that would seem to imply then that maybe you can't know when you're going to be able to attack them. So if you're a tzaddik gemur and you're confident of that, and it's melee d'day, so you might expect to be able to, unless shamis hakekel might still get in the way. The Turi Evan, when he reads this sugya, he goes through the whole possibilities, and he thinks, in the end, it gets complicated because there's another sugya in Brachot, which just goes the exact opposite way. He thinks, in the end, it turns out that the put all the sugya together, that that there's no real difference between milei didei milei d'shamai. If you're a tzaddik gemur, you can go up against them, and if you're not a tzaddik gemur, so if it's not specifically sha'am misacheket lo, if it's not specifically that things are just, his fortune seems to be going so great, then you can go up against him. But if his fortunes are really great, so then, and tzaddik she'eino gemur, then you probably want to stay away from him and try to duck and wait until the tides and the shifts of history change. So what we're having here in this first paragraph of Habakkuk, therefore, is from the question that Habakkuk is raising, we're getting some introduction. There are never any ironclad answers. There's always a lot of factors that go into it, but we're getting some indications of the kinds of issues that come up in terms of understanding things like an individual level, things like when the evildoers succeed and when they don't, how we handle that. Pasuk Yidal, Vatase Adam Kidgi Hayam Kremes Lamu Shelbo. So Habakkuk is still talking in terms of Bavel and what they're going to do to Jewish people. So he says, and you make people, he makes people like fish to Bavel, which means, what does that mean? Which means that he can just fish them. There are going to be so many of them that he's going to be able to capture. He can just use a net, right? He fishes them all up with a line, or pulls them in his troll, meaning in his big nets, and he takes them in, and he can celebrate the fact that he's winning and succeeding so well over them. So that's the complaint here, right? That the Jewish people become before Habakkuk like fish, who he can just capture in a net, and he takes all of them in his possession, and he spoils them, etc. But based on that comparison of fish, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Gimel Amud Bet says, why are people compared to fish? Just like fish, as soon as they go on the dry land, they die. So too, people, when they leave Torah, they die. And that's relevant to a famous Rabbi Akiva, who said also, if we leave Torah, we're like fish and we die. But there are more examples in that Gemara in Avodah Zarah. I just noticed that I'm way over time, so this Gemara in Avodah Zarah will have to be discussed another time. The only point that I would make about it is that the Gemara there assumes, in one manifestation of it, assumes that in the future the sun will be a source of healing for the righteous and a source of pain and suffering for the evildoers because of this comparison to fish and the way the heat hurts the fish. And that whole idea that there will be manifestations of nature which will differentiate between, based upon our spiritual differences, that is a topic and a theme that I find very interesting because it suggests that nature is sensitive to spirituality, which in our very physicalist world and our naturalist, our scientific world, we often don't believe, but that is what the Gemara there assumes. So Pasuk Tet Zayin Al Kain Gizabeach Lechemo V'Kater Limichmarto Ki Vahima Shamein Chilko Ma'achalo Biriyah. So he's going to bow down or sacrifice because of all of these great things that have happened. He's, you know, pulling the people in, he's pulling in the prisoners. So he's going to bow down, as it were, lechermo, to his nets and to his fishing trawls and to, Rashi thinks it means to his idols. And the Radak thinks it means to his own power. He's going to assume it comes from him or from his idols, and clearly not going to recognize that it comes from God. This is also a theme in the book of Daniel, where Daniel is living with the kings, and repeatedly events happen that are supposed to bring those kings, the Babylonian kings, to confront the fact that it's really Hashem doing it, and they sort of learn the lesson, they forget it, they learn the lesson, they forget it, and here, that's what Chabuk is complaining about, Halkein Yerik Chermo V'tamid L'Ro Goyim Lo Yachmol. So is it because of that, that Hashem, you're going to give him the power, a person like this, a nation like this, you're going to give them the power to do what they're going to be able to do to the Jewish people? And that is the complaint of Chabakuk. It's eloquent, and it's anguished, and it says much of what we'd like to say. The only sad part of it is that it's said at a time when the Jews are so evil and doing so much wrong that, first of all, it's not going to be successful, and secondly, the answers are sort of at the very side of the questions, in that the reason all this is being allowed to happen stems primarily and first and foremost from our having failed to do what we were supposed to do. Have a great day.